evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions, and we'll be taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
Are you back in this time zone here?
I am back in this time zone.
Wow.
Happily back in this time zone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's great to do this at 5 in the afternoon instead of 2 in the morning.
Oh, yes.
Not that we didn't have fun doing it at 2 in the morning, mind you.
Yes.
Not that I'm complaining, but 5 p.m. is good.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was wondering if you wanted to say anything more about your trip since you've been back.
Oh, gosh. Well, since we've been back, yeah, I kind of do. As a matter of fact, we were, as you well know, in a big meeting today about all of this kind of thing. And we have a lot of follow-up keeping folks informed about the work that we did. So we did that blog, and sounds like a lot of folks were following along. And then we realized that if we just stopped when we came back, it would be kind of a, well, but whatever happened to...
Yes.
So we've actually decided to continue it until we get to the point that we've kind of completed the circle on all of the stuff that we got started. So people can tune in for the whatever. I don't know how long it'll go on, but we have lots of things that we want to follow up on. And so I just, in fact, wrote one today about if people remember Josephine and her story.
Yes.
So I wrote the rest of her tale and how we followed up with that and where she is now and what's going on with her. And we're going to do that with several other of the folks that we've met and let people know some exciting stuff that's happened with the city of Indola and their plan for the Cantalomba compound and how beautifully it ties in with ours and stuff like that.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah. So
that's
it's kind of we're just sort of continuing on.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yes, it is.
And people would go to the same location, the same Africa blog page.
Yep, we'll just, I can't remember how many, I can't even remember now what it's called, but they're all organized by blog number. And
yes.
So the last one that came in with the last day or so spent in Indola and then in Lusaka, and then we all got on the planes and left. And now we'll just have the next one with Josephine's story and then following along with the other folks.
Fabulous.
Yeah. It's remarkable. I wish everybody could go there. I wish everybody could have the experience that we had because, I feel so connected to the people who are a part of our Sangha, and, I always hasten to explain that I mean everybody who's listening to this show, everybody that reads the blog, everybody who reads the books, everybody who goes on retreat or attends a workshop or in whatever way people are involved with this practice, I feel very connected with those folks. And now it's the connection, the circle is just expanded. Because we have such a deep connection now with this whole group of people there in Indola and especially in Cantalomba. And I just, I wish all the cousins could meet each other. It's like we could have a big family reunion.
Yes.
And all these distant relatives would get to know one another and would just love one another. I'm convinced of it.
Connect and reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Sherry, you know, I hesitate to give out the phone number. You remember that email show we did a month or so back?
Yes.
We did a pre-recorded one. It generated a lot more email questions.
I see. Well, that's great.
That is great.
Yeah. So we have two choices now, right? You can give out the phone number. If somebody calls, we'll talk to them. If not, we have all these emails, apparently.
I'm going to read one question, and then I'll give out the phone number.
All right.
I'm sure people can look it up online, too, if they want to. Sherry, I cannot make, quote, someone in here, unquote, get rid of years of clutter and organize papers, files from past careers. My apartment is just a clutter trap with little room for me to enjoy myself in. I've tried bringing in organizers to help. I've made fits and starts myself, and yet nothing has changed. Sometimes I'll tell myself, quote, I just don't have the time I need to go through all this, unquote, or, quote, I don't have the money for storage, unquote, or et cetera. In truth, I can't seem to let go of stuff I haven't used, things that I bought new that I never used. I also have a terrible time deciding, quote, should I save this or not, unquote. Quote, will I need it in the future or not, unquote. It's very frustrating, makes me critical of myself, uses up my time and energy without ever making any progress or getting it resolved. Should I just throw everything out and be done with it? Help. Thank you from a listener.
Well, you know, I'm actually quite supportive of that last. I don't know if I've ever told you this story, but when I went into the monastery where I trained, we were required to get rid of everything. And, you know, my teacher didn't care what we did with it as long as we got rid of it.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I gave it all away and put it in, but there was this little box of stuff that I just could not bear to part with. And it was probably, you know, a cardboard box, 2 feet long, a foot across, you know, the standard cardboard box.
Yeah.
So I had these things, and I put them in a friend's basement to, you know, save for me against the occasion when I would decide to leave the monastery. And so when I left the monastery, I contacted my friend to reclaim my possessions, only to find that the basement had flooded, and this little box of treasures was ruined and gone. And you know, I couldn't even remember what was in that box. It was so liberating.
Yes.
And so, yes, that is a wonderful thing. I bet just about everybody shares this quality. Like, you know, I've been gone now for 5-6 weeks, something like that, away from my house. And somebody could have come in and taken everything out of it. And it would have taken me a really long time to go through the, oh, such and such is gone. Oh, you know, because, in fact, I wouldn't have remembered most of what was in this house.
Yeah.
And would probably never really, I just probably wouldn't really miss it.
Yeah.
You know, some things, yes, that I really love, but for the most part, they're just things. And if they're gone, then I get to go out and replace them. So,
yeah.
You know, I have kind of a little coffee or tea cup fetish. And so, you know, I get to go out and, I mean, I live alone. You know, I have like 15 cups. You know, I could get another whole collection and just have a wonderful time doing that. So if somebody came in when I wasn't here and took it all, it would be no problem. But if I have to go through it,
yeah,
and say, oh, let's see, this, no, that, well, there's nothing I want to get rid of.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, old papers, no. I don't have a thing about old papers. I can usually just recycle those without without a backward glance. But, you know, everybody has their own thing. And so I it'd be fun to hear from people, but I bet most of us have trouble saying, okay, I can let that go when we're holding it in our hands.
Yeah.
So I'm always supportive of having somebody else go through the stuff. And
yes.
yeah, just, you know, when you have those organizers or movers or whoever it is come in, then, you know, just don't be home when that happens. So the other thing, of course, that I'm always most supportive of is approaching it as a process rather than a destination. So if I set it up that, and it sounds like this person has some of this going on, you know, I'm the right person if I can get rid of all this stuff, and I'm the wrong person and I have to be beaten up by the voices of self-hatred if I don't get rid of it, well, you know, that's nowhere kind of place to be. You know, it's just self-hate. It doesn't have anything to do with the content. So if we take it on as a project, you know, I'm going to watch how all of this is held in place in my karmic system, then it can be kind of, well, in fact, I think it's really fun and really interesting. You know, so this week I'm going to see what it's like to let go of 10 items.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm going to see what, just, I'm going to watch what happens to me as I find those items. And, you know, or I'm going to go through one box of stuff this month. And I'm going to divide it out and find out how much, you know, I have to go through 2 inches of that box a day, or, you know, every 3 days or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And just set it up like a little mini workshop and keep notes and watch what happens and which parts of me come up to have a say in it, and take it out of the realm of self-hatred. And then it can be really illuminating. And then it doesn't matter. You know, if you're doing a workshop and you're enjoying the workshop, you're not really eager for it to be over. So if it takes a lifetime to work through a piece of karma like that, well, so what? You're going to do something anyway. Might as well be doing something that's letting you have a deeper, clearer relationship with yourself.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful.
So I hope that person is listening and will let us know what the decision is, you know, what's the plan, and then we can follow along with how it unfolds.
Yes. So your encouragement is to focus on the process rather than trying to get to a particular destination.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, everybody has a good reason for being the way they are. So it's not hard for me to project that that person suffered some kind of terrible loss. You know, it can be a fire that goes through and destroys the whole history of a family, or a flood, or having everything taken away, or, you know, as a Buddhist, I don't have the only thing affecting us is what happened to us in this lifetime. You know, we're talking anywhere in the kalpas of history that human beings have been cycling around. So at somewhere in time and space, that person suffered a terrible loss of possessions and experienced deep trauma with that. So then they turn into kind of a little pack rat to try to buffer themselves against that, those feelings of loss and deprivation and, you know, all of the stuff that goes with that. So, you know, if we consider that as a possibility, it doesn't have to be true. What difference does it make if it's true? Most stuff we believe isn't true. So, but if we consider it from that perspective, then we can have a lot of sympathy for the person who has trouble getting rid of things or letting go of things. It's understandable.
Yes.
Yeah, so we want to be gentle and respectful and kind toward that person instead of punishing and humiliating and judgmental and harsh. I mean, what, you know, if we just take a little step back, it doesn't matter. You know, if you die with clean surfaces or cluttered surfaces, you're just as dead.
Huh?
So, you know, there are, as far as I know, there are no extra points for having uncluttered surfaces. You know, it's just it's a cultural thing. It's a belief that a lot of people have been conditioned to share, but, you know, being conditioned to share beliefs doesn't mean stuff is true.
Yes. Wonderful. Thank you, Sherry.
Mm.
I'll risk giving out the phone number now.
You are so courageous. We'll just both get ready here.
Yeah, and the stack of emails here, well, I have to reassure people that we're going to get to them.
Yes, if we live long enough, we will. If not, there again, you know, if you die with no emails pending or a lot of emails pending, you're just as dead.
Toll free in North America, phone number is 866-613-1612. Phone lines are wide open here, and we are eagerly awaiting your call. If you're not in North America, you can reach us at 001-858-268-3068. So if you're in Zambia or Europe or China or wherever, you can give us a call, and we'd love to talk to you today.
Wouldn't that be fun if somebody called from Zambia? Gosh, yeah. I would love that.
That would be exciting, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, I'm going to read you another email question here.
All right.
Sherry, thank you for giving us this gift every week. I talked with you a few weeks ago. I continue to deal with negative, hurtful voices, which sound very authoritative. I know from practice these voices go on for a long time, and that it's how I deal with them that is the practice. Yet still, I feel out of touch and dissociated from everyday life. I do my work, I go to the gym, etc., but I feel like, quote, I, unquote, am not there, not grounded, or centered in my body. This has been a lifelong problem. Nothing I do seems important, and it seems to be getting worse. Today it hit again that at bottom I don't want to be here. I've experienced this on and off my whole life. Then the fear is paralyzing. What my mind says is, quote, who in the world can help me with this? This practice isn't equipped to handle something like this, and there's not enough contact with encouragement or direction from it every day. This takes me to, quote, do I want to live or not? Unquote.
Okay, we got to stop right here. Okay, we got to stop right here. Because if this person is listening in, here's the deal. Drop everything, close up your house, your apartment, sell whatever, do whatever you want to do with it, come to the monastery.
Sell your stuff, close up your house or apartment,
yep,
and move to the monastery.
And move to the monastery. I mean, it's absurd. When somebody is at that point in life, to stay in those circumstances, okay, I'm too far away from support and encouragement, well, then go live near it. In fact, go live right in the middle of it.
Uh-huh.
The voices are saying, I don't know if I want to live. Well, then go where life happens. You know, that if a person ever needs a clearer, I can't imagine a clearer piece of information that says the way you're doing it is not working.
Yes.
And for egocentric karmic conditioning to start talking about whether or not you should be alive, that's when you say, I'm not living with you anymore. I'm going to go where another life is possible. And I'll tell you, just the mere threat of going to the monastery is going to shut those voices up in a hurry. Now, will they come back again? Absolutely. And when they do, that's the answer. I'm not living with you. I'm not putting up with you. If I can't be happy here, then I'm going to try something dramatically different.
Yes.
Yeah. Those are not the two choices. Either live in an egocentrically, karmically conditioned, controlled, whatever form of those words we have, to live in that kind of situation or kill myself, those are not the two choices. The viable alternative is let go of conditioning. just say no to self-hate and discover the joy and the passion and the excitement that is your birthright. Those are the two choices. Live in the misery and suffering of egocentric karmic conditioning, or cut loose from that and enjoy the bliss of your authentic nature.
Wow. Enjoy the bliss of your authentic nature.
Yep.
Or live with self-hate and conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there are a lot of people who live in self-hatred, in egocentric karmic conditioning, and they just have a low-level misery that they go through life with, and they're fine with that. You know, they know something else is possible, but, you know, they're not really that miserable. But when somebody starts talking about killing themselves, then we've crossed a line. You know, this is no longer, you know, this is just no longer, I'll just go on and tolerate this until something changes. No. Just say no. Say no to self-hatred.
Yes.
Get thee to a nunnery.
Uh-huh. Say no to self-hatred. Get thee to a nunnery.
Or a monastery in this case.
Okay, I have another email question here for you, a shorter one this time.
All right.
Hi, Sherry and Michael. Thanks for the advice you gave about the whole deal with compassion. It helps me a lot. I'm writing to tell you that I've had my first experience in a monastery, and it was great. Since I have been back, all I want to do is go unconscious and eat.
Mm-hmm.
It is driving me crazy.
Mm-hmm. It'll drive you to a monastery.
I feel fat, and it's getting hard, as it's been nearly 3 months since I've been doing that behavior. Do you think conditioning is trying to punish me for going to the monastery? And what can I do to help myself? Thank you from a listener in England.
Okay. As we know, at least if you want to accept this particular explanation of how life works, we live in one of two places, and those two places are in opposition. Okay, they're not really. Center is not actually in opposition to conditioning, but when we're identified with conditioning, it feels that way.
Yes.
So I am either here at center, where there is nothing wrong, and life is just what it is, and there is acceptance and joy and all of those kinds of things, a sense of well-being, even though there are problems, even though a person might be sick or have an accident or lose a loved one or a job or whatever it is. Life goes on exactly the same, but there is no belief that there's something wrong that results in suffering, okay? Or we're living outside of center. We believe because we're identified with egocentric karmic conditioning, okay? And egocentric karmic conditioning being a survival system that has as its 24/7 focus its own survival, it does not enjoy people paying attention, practicing awareness, going to monasteries, considering letting it go. Okay? Its survival means it is in control of your life all the time. And it remains the center of the universe by suffering and being miserable and unhappy and focused on all of the awful things that are so. None of which are true, but that's the illusion that it lives in. Okay? So, absolutely, if you do something like trying to wake up, like trying to leave unconsciousness and come into clarity, conditioning is going to throw you into a state of backlash, like bungee jumping off the Empire State Building. You can just expect it. Now, the thing to, you know, now what conditioning would say to that is, well, then don't ever go to a monastery. Don't ever try to wake up. Just stay unconscious, and it won't be that bad. And, of course, anybody who, you know, wants to take a quick little peek at that knows that that's hogwash, that going through life being miserable in an attempt to avoid misery is not intelligent. So what we do is we bite the bullet and we do what's necessary to get to the other side of egocentric karmic conditioning so that we are free. This doesn't go on forever. You know, clearly, obviously, it doesn't go on forever because we all know people who have gone to the other side of conditioning and are free of it.
Yes.
If we didn't know anyone like that, then we would say it's hopeless, it's useless. We just have to stay here in this suffering and misery because that's the human condition. But it's not the human condition. It's conditioning's condition.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess it is the human's conditioning.
Yes.
Yeah. But is that all that's available to us? No. Is it hard to get through it? Yes. Yes, it is. It really is. But it's not as hard as staying stuck in it.
Yes.
Yeah. So, that's all. That's all there is to it. Yeah. Conditioning is going to try to talk you into being miserable and sitting on the couch and eating junk food until you weigh 500 pounds and then self-hatred has a lot of ammunition. And, yeah, that's true.
Yes. I like the bungee jumping backlash image.
It's quite a picture, isn't it?
Yes. Sherry, we have a caller here.
Oh, very good.
I'd like to welcome Dawn from Los Angeles. You're
Who
on
is
Open
it?
Air with Sherry Huber.
Who do we have?
Hi, Dawn.
Dawn.
Dawn. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Doing good. You?
Well, I'm wondering, I've read most of your books, not all of them, and the one concept that I would ask you to, if you could say more about it, is projection.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a lot of trouble understanding it, and now I'm finding that in day-to-day life, like if I have a judgment about somebody or if I think something, you know, really more the negative stuff because that's what I'm really trying to pay attention to and watch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm confused about how much of it is projection and why. And, you know, if I say someone is a rotten person, does that mean I'm a rotten person? I guess I don't understand it very well.
Well, I think the bad news is you do understand it. Yeah, that's what it means. It means that you are going to your conditioned definition of rotten person,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you are projecting onto the other person. And the thing about it is, now, do we all know rotten? Of course we all know rotten.
Mm-hmm.
We do. I mean, there's nobody, as much as they'd like to fool themselves and everybody else, who doesn't know rotten person from a personal experience perspective.
Right.
Okay? So we project that onto the person, but that's not their experience. You see, it's just my definition of what a rotten person says, does, and looks like.
Okay.
Yeah, so God knows what they're doing.
Well, and the part I get hung up on is, like, yeah, I understand, like, it would be my experience as I view that person. So that's projection, but I guess where I get hung up is in the words in the books where it talks about that's also me.
It is.
So
it is.
So am I rotten too?
Of course.
There's a part of me that is.
Of course. Okay. And don't you know it?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
The voices tell me every day.
That's right. Well, that's a different. Now that's something different. Okay. So the voices are going to tell you that you're rotten, usually when you're not.
Okay.
They're going to deny that you're rotten when you are.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So what you do is, you know, in a centered moment, just look back over your life and consider the number of people who, when they remember you as a rotten person. Okay? So that means...
There's a couple.
Yeah. You didn't give them what they wanted.
Ex-husbands or, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. Now, does that mean you're a rotten person? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It means that they are projecting their definition of rotten person onto you.
Mm-hmm.
You have your own experience of rotten person, which is different from what you're projecting onto anybody else or what's being projected onto you. And what I mean by that is that we all have a place where we can go to center,
mm-hmm.
and without judgment, without self-criticism or self-hatred or punishment or anything else, we can quietly know that was a rotten thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know that one?
Yes.
Doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't, I don't need to be punished. It's just that quiet, I don't want to be that way. I don't want to do that. Yeah?
Yeah, I've done that. And then the battle, I guess, is keeping that from escalating into self-hatred.
That's right.
Okay.
Because what we know is conditioning will take advantage of anything to cause suffering. So you can have that moment of clarity where you just, you hear yourself saying something to somebody, or, you know, there's an insight where suddenly you realize what that must have sounded like to the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it's a moment of clarity. And then conditioning is going to try to jump in there and use, yeah, see, you see how you are, blah, 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 blah. And that's why it is critical, as we do awareness practice, that we eliminate self-hatred from the mix.
Can you say more about how to eliminate it? I mean, I know about meditation, because that's where I'm stuck too. Is the process of eliminating the self-hatred?
Yeah. Okay. So, do you have somebody that in your life that you feel you love unconditionally?
My dog.
Your dog?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
not really
any people, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. It's harder. It's easier with dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs, cats, birds, fish. It's easier.
Babies.
Yeah. So she? She?
Yeah.
Okay. So has she ever done anything that she shouldn't have done?
Oh, sure.
Okay. And so when she does something that she shouldn't do, do you feel that it's, do you correct her?
Not usually.
Not usually?
I mean, it depends on if I catch her in the act, but if she has an accident, I just pick it up and...
Carry on.
So
if you catch her in the act, you might say, the kitchen floor is not the place to do that.
Right.
Okay. But you don't continue to berate her.
Never.
You don't kick her every time you go past her.
Mm-mm.
You don't tell her what a rotten, useless dog she is.
Never.
Never.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we're looking for with ourselves.
Okay.
When I catch me in the act, I get it. Ooh, that was not skillful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm gonna work at not repeating that, and that's the end of it.
And then let it go.
And let it go. And here's the secret to that.
Hmm.
And this is where meditation does come in. And at some point, you might avail yourself of a "There's nothing wrong with you" retreat.
I'm already signed up for October.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay. So. What is required for everybody is learning to direct your attention. If you know how to direct your attention, you can discern the difference between, okay, I got the information, and when it slides into self-hate, just abusing you. And you know the difference.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So when you watch... when you're there and you're present and you see self-hate coming up and starting to take over, if you know how to direct your attention, you turn your attention away from self-hatred, back to your breath, back to your body, back to the blue sky, to the cute little dog, to whatever.
Uh-huh.
You're here and you're fine.
Okay.
The person who cannot direct her attention is doomed to be victimized by self-hatred.
Yes.
Because the voice kicks in And there's no hope. It's like, you know, it's like being mesmerized. It's,
oh, for me, it could turn into 36 hours.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So it's, that's the simple secret of the whole thing.
Okay.
And, you know, you can practice directing your attention all day long. You know, that's in awareness practice. That's where I start talking about, you know, painting one of your fingernails black or, you know, tying things around your fingers or whatever it is that reminds you to direct your attention, to notice where your attention is and direct it where you choose it.
So when you feel it coming on, you look at either the fingernail or the
Object. Well, you train yourself to come back to the present.
Okay.
And that is a training process. You know, you can do all kinds of things, and the more you do to remind yourself to be present, the more present you will be. So you can do it with colors, you can do it with jewelry, you can do it with, you know, just anything. You can write things on the back of your hand, however kooky you're willing to be.
Yeah.
Okay?
Signs all over the house. I
could
do that.
And every time you see those things, you remember to come back to direct your attention back here. You notice where you were. You bring your attention back to the breath is, I think, the easiest. And you take a long, full breath, and then away you go. And it's not a contest. It's not an opportunity for self-hatred if you're not meeting some standard. There are no standards. You're just training yourself to come back here, to direct your attention away from it, from where it habitually wanders, and to be back here with you, just like a puppy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Good.
Yeah. And you go over that in depth at the There's Nothing Wrong With You?
Well, you bring it up, and your facilitators will definitely talk to you about it. We're all very excited about that subject.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
See you in October.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Yes, Don, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Coming up next on second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Bill from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Sherry. I've been listening to the show, and I actually came home particularly to hear you today. I've read many of your books. Sweet Zen is on my bed table every night, and I'm going to be coming to the October retreat as well. And I understand the concepts, and I've been in analysis and therapy for years, but last night I had to tell my partner of many years that I was thinking of hurting him and that thought had crossed my mind. And I know what it is. I know it's that backlash, the bungee jumping backlash, but it scares the bejesus out of me. And I also find that same voice wanting to attack me. And I can listen to you say no to self-hate and get to the monastery, but I don't know what to do specifically to stop that voice. And I think maybe the retreat will help, but do you have any thoughts that would help today?
I hope so.
I would really love it.
First of all, stopping the voice is not our goal.
Okay.
Ceasing to believe it is what's going to make the difference. So I would suggest, and I bet you'll agree with me, that because of the work that you've done. That what happens is you become identified with a particular aspect of yourself, of your personality.
Mm-hmm.
And how would you describe him? Is he angry?
Very angry child who grew up in an alcoholic household, very angry, unexpressed anger.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that still the case? Do you still try?
Well, in my adult life, no. I'm very accomplished and effective, and I have a loving relationship, but there, that part of me still exists.
Right. But do you express anger?
I don't know how to answer that. I think when I'm angry, I do. I'm not angry all the time, but that part is still inside.
Right. Okay. But
when I'm angry, I express it.
You do. You
I think
feel
so.
Like you are expressive. You don't feel like you're stuffing a bunch of emotion.
No, but I think I did when I was a child.
Right. And then you still don't have a relationship with that part of you.
I've worked on it for eons, but no, I guess I don't in some way.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I mean, 6 years of analysis 4 times a week, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, you've seen a lot. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you've seen it all.
No, I haven't.
Yeah. So that's good. So, because if you had, you'd be kind of hopeless at this point, right?
Right, but I'm not hopeless, and that's why I'm on the phone with you.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, can you hear the edge in your voice right now?
Well, I'm pretty anxious right now.
Okay. And are you able to see the relationship between anxiety and anger?
No.
Okay. It'd be a really good place to look. Okay? So here is this part of you. Now, you know, in Zen, we actually don't spend a lot of time differentiating emotion.
Right.
Okay? Because it's energy.
Right.
And it just depends on a person's conditioning where and how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So a tremendous relationship between anxiety, depression, and rage.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So those are just three ways of interacting with the same set of sensations.
Okay.
All right? So that anxiety comes up. Somebody starts getting panicked about it. Okay? Goes into a conditioned reaction to it. And then is in relationship to these sensations. And pretty soon it explodes. You
mm-hmm.
explode. Okay? And so the work, the bottom line goal of what you're looking at, I hate to say this because it sounds so simplistic and annoying, is to get back to center. Okay?
Well, I do meditate. I'm new at it.
Uh-huh.
But I am meditating. That's helpful.
Yes, it is. And it's going to be getting back to a place that knows there is nothing to fear.
I'm sorry, that knows there's nothing what?
To fear.
To fear.
So one of the easiest ways to think about this is a mentoring person. Okay? So if you had an older brother,
mm-hmm.
and he's known you all of your life, and he sees you go into these rages, and he's not afraid of you. He's
mm-hmm.
he's not afraid of your rages. He just doesn't get invested. He doesn't get involved with it.
Right.
Would that be comforting to you?
Yes, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, you could scream, yell, throw things, threaten, and he just kind of listens and nods and accepts how you feel and understands how you feel. Knows that it's not who you really are, knows that you're going to move through this, knows that it's going to be okay. You know, it'd be a really safe place for you to feel all of the ways that you feel.
Okay? Okay.
That's the guy you're looking for inside of you.
Okay.
Because right now, I project, the group that you're dealing with is, first of all, this guy who gets anxious and has nowhere to go with the anxiety. He
mm-hmm.
tries to depress it, he tries to stuff it, he tries to be all right with it, and the pressure just builds and builds and builds and builds until he explodes.
Now, well, I don't ever explode. That's the thing. I just have these thoughts.
Well, you're exploding into thought, aren't you?
Yes, I'm exploding into thought.
Yeah. You're able to control what you say, how you act, but somebody's afraid you're not going to be able to.
Yeah, that's why I'm on the phone.
That's right. Yeah. So that's kind of the whole package, okay? It's being left with someone who is afraid rather than someone who can reassure and take care of you.
Okay. That's a place to get to.
That's right. And it would be lovely if we could just get there automatically, because we understand that that's where we're going. But you're going to have to build that relationship with that mentor in the same way you build any other relationship.
Right.
And
okay.
And what you can't do is wait until you are in a panic/rage to try to build the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to bring him into your life and start letting him be the one who's calling the shots in your life. You're looking to him constantly for advice, for encouragement, for reassurance.
Okay.
All right? And so it's that I would imagine, well, let me ask you, do you know that part of you?
At times, I think I do, but then that voice kicks in that says, you know, drive into the other lane or hurt that person.
Yeah.
Hurt the person you love the most.
Yeah.
And I meditate and I read your books and all the stuff that I've done in the past. So it's kind of a
okay
back and forth.
Bill,
yeah.
That's a story. Okay?
That's a story.
Just a story. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
We're right here, right now.
Okay.
So when you hear a voice saying drive into the other lane, what you're going to train yourself to do is look to that mentor.
Okay.
Okay, so if your partner were really in trouble about something, really hurting, really upset, would you be able to be there in that mentoring role?
In every way.
In every way. Okay, so that's the guy you're looking for you.
Okay.
All right, so you're not going to look to someone who is afraid, someone who's, well, it's the afraid. You know, the rage is not a problem. It's the person who is afraid of that. He
okay.
needs to start looking toward that mentor.
I appreciate that mentor
will be there for him exactly the way the mentor will be there for your partner.
Okay. That's very helpful.
Good.
That's really helpful.
Take a look at it. Practice it a little. Let me know.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Bill. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, it's an exciting show today.
A lot going on.
Very good. Sherry, I have another email question here.
Okay. Now, something has happened because you have faded off into the distance for me. So maybe holler.
Can you hear me now?
Just barely.
Okay, great. I'm going to check in with our engineer and see if that's any better.
Yeah, because it started out this way, and then you got very audible, and now you've slid off the radar screen.
Okay, great. Can you hear me now?
Marginally better.
Okay, I will speak loudly. Greetings, Michael and Sherry. I have a question that I hope you can address on your show. The question is simply this. What is the basis for morality, specifically from the Zen perspective? If light cannot be known apart from darkness and vice versa, if good and evil are terms that we apply to certain things and situations, when in actuality things just are what they are, if pain and suffering can be great teachers.
Okay, I gotta interrupt this one too. Okay, because we're gonna go off into some sort of intellectual something that doesn't have anything to do with the question.
Yes.
Okay? So it's much simpler than this person is trying to make it in the world of duality.
Uh-huh.
And it goes right back to what we were talking about earlier. There are two places from which we live. One is from center, and the other is from egocentric karmic conditioning. The world of egocentric karmic conditioning is the world of duality. That's the world in which we have love and hate and right and wrong and good and bad and us and them and up and down. And it's the world that almost everybody is living in all the time.
Yes.
But that world of duality is contained within what we talk about as center. When we are centered, when we are present, when we are living in a non-separate reality, there is absolutely no desire to cause harm. Now, that is not the same as we are able to control life. So, I am a person, I've had many, many lifetimes as a Jane, okay? The Jains are a group of folks started out in India who are so devoted to harmlessness that in its most extreme form, they don't move because and they wear something over their face so that they don't breathe in little microscopic critters and kill them in that way.
Wow.
So I take the route of, you know, if I'm walking along, I'm aware, as aware as I can be, of what's on the ground, because I don't want to step on little critters and ants and things like that that live down there. So I'm very attentive to what's there, and I cannot control that to the point that I never step on anything and take its life. I can't. I can be as aware and as present and attentive as I can be. I can do the very best that I can do, and I have no control over life.
Yes.
Yeah. So where does morality come from? Morality comes from presence, from an understanding that there is no self and other, that nothing can happen to you that doesn't happen to me, that we are one. And that understanding, not as an intellectual understanding, not as a theory, but experientially knowing that, causes us to want to, as the classic traditional way of saying it in Buddhism, to cease from evil, to do only good, and to do good for others. Selfishness, a willingness to be harmful, taking what is not rightfully ours, all of that it lives in the realm of egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yes. So the morality comes from being present.
Pardon me?
So the morality comes from being present.
Yes. Yes. And it's not even morality at that point. It's simply oneness. It's interconnectedness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And in that place, there's no room for all of those dualities.
No. The dualities exist. But it's not something that we need to figure out or understand. It's true that light doesn't happen without darkness. If we view that in the world of duality, then they are opposites. When we step back and see that from center, we realize they are one.
Yes.
They're simply two ends of a continuum. They're not separate. You can't have one without the other. It's not a problem. life and death all happens within life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
It is. It is wonderful.
It is wonderful. And the range of topics we've touched on today is just fabulous.
Yeah. You know, the thing about that, the reason that I stopped that question is that all of this that we're talking about, all of it is experiential. Intellectual understanding is fine if it inspires us to have the experience.
Yes.
But an intellectual understanding without the experience is absolutely useless. It's like being really hungry and having an intellectual understanding that eating food is going to take care of that hunger.
Yeah.
The only thing that's going to take care of that hunger is eating the food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jerry, we're at the end of our hour.
I know. It happens.
It happens.
Let's do it again next week.
Sounds great.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Bye.
Good night.